That was my good announcer voice.
Yes, it was. Hello. Welcome to the show, everyone. 362.
Whoa!
This is unprecedented. Tell them why.
Oh, my gosh. This is the first time. I almost feel like weird saying this.
Yeah,
this is
I know.
The very first time ever. We were like, that episode was really garbage. We should
it was
probably,
a dud.
It was a dud. We'll
this
scrap
it. This is a redo.
It. Yeah, I wasn't in the right frame of mind.
We were, because I was listening back and I'm like, why are we so serious?
Yes, I think that's it.
This
what is that?
It was a dark day.
Okay, yeah.
But I don't know why.
What's that about?
I don't know, but I was like, this is not us.
Yeah, you know, maybe, you know what's funny is like I heard from a friend once that like if you have like those nights where you like go out drinking and have a lot of fun, the next day you can like be kind of depressed. It's like all the serotonin is drained and everything. And I had a really good date the night before, and I wonder if I was just like there was all the
depleted.
Good all the good chemicals in my brain were just like gone.
Were you sad?
I wasn't sad. I was just like kind of melancholy. Like I don't know, like not.
Energetic.
Yeah.
But it wasn't and just you. Like, it was like, what? Both of us, the whole vibe was just like, what's the word?
Morose?
Yeah.
Like,
and I was like, what? Flat. It was just flat.
Flat. Well, we are not flat.
Never again.
Never. I mean, the only thing flat about me is my chest, so.
You make up for it in the nether regions.
There you go. Hi-o. Talk about my booty.
Hey. Welcome to the show, everyone. We're hopeful that this will be not flat.
Yeah, and I think also I didn't even get to talk to you a lot about the event that we did.
Oh, yeah.
And which was so much fun, the one that I did, Sweat and Reset. But what was most fun about that weekend is catching up with an old friend who basically, like, we ran through hilarious stories of, like, shenanigans that we
from
days past. Uh-huh. And she reminded me of all this hilarious stuff I did. Like, for example, we went on this trip. It was like, we were 17. I was 17. She was just turned 18. And somehow our families allowed us, me, Ashley, and then our other friend, Kylie, to take the car and go up and stay at my family's house in Cambria. 17-year-old girls.
Yeah, that's...
I mean...
An invitation for trouble.
Trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Along the way, we got Ashley's tongue pierced. It was like a whole night of that.
No way.
And she had just turned 18, so it's like, let's do everything that we're not supposed to do. So she's like, I want to buy cigarettes. So she bought a bag of cigarettes. And then... somehow convinced me to chain smoke them all night long. And she was like, if you ever have a problem with smoking, I'm the cause because I forced you. And I was like, no, another. She kept on telling me like, more, you know, keep doing it. And I was heavy in the rockabilly. Like,
oh, I remember
so
that,
it was like
Sarah.
A whole thing. And I'm like, yeah, that's what like they do. Sure, I'll smoke cigarettes. And the ease to which I just took down a cigarette was like.
Yeah, you never had a habit.
Oh,
did
for
you?
Like a minute when I lived in England.
Like how long?
And I would just, like, oh, like 3 months. Yeah.
You had a 3 month addiction.
Yeah. Well, and I would joke that the only reason I started smoking in England was because at least this way I have a filter because you're like surrounded by smoke all the time. And I thought that was a funny joke.
Do you know how they say that some people can get addicted to cigarettes, other people are kind of immune to it?
Yeah.
Do you buy that, number one? Oh. And do you think you fall into that category?
Well, I definitely think that like the ease in which I was just able to go, yeah, no, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
And I can still, you know, I'll have a night where, like, you know, maybe I'll be out in Vegas and it'll be like, and then as soon as I do it, like, it's terrible. Cigarettes themselves, but, like, yeah, it's not really. But, it was not.
You don't have that thing that makes you want more and more cigarettes.
I don't think so.
That's lucky.
Yeah, and after I got pregnant, the smell of it is, like, the worst thing in the world to me. So now it's like when I'm driving in the car and somebody at a stoplight is smoking, I can smell it even with my windows rolled up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, what are they doing? Stop, get out of here with that.
Well, I'm sure you're privy to the drama lately regarding vaping and, you know, all the harm.
Right.
Is that what you do?
So, every now and then.
Because I never know, like, are they talking about, what are they talking about? The liquid weird stuff or like pot?
Well, I'm kind of confused on that, too.
Such a mom.
Yeah, because... So what I'm hearing is that there are these counterfeit...
Oh.
Like, cartridges and counterfeit things going around. And those are filled, just like anything, with stuff that's
synthetic
like filler.
Or something.
Yeah. And so if you get it from a place that where they do all the quality testing and all that stuff, then, you know. But then again, anything is like, is it really
true? But
good?
Like, what are they saying is injurious? Like what?
So what I've heard is the what people are, what they're finding is there was vitamin E oil, like a vitamin E, which you'd think, okay, we put
in
it on
what?
Inside the liquid. Like,
and is this liquid supposed to simulate marijuana?
So what it is if you were to take, it's kind of like extracting oil from something.
Yeah.
You know, you can either burn it dry, like, and smoke it dry.
Yeah.
Or you can press it and extract the oil, and it creates, like, a concentrate. And then that concentrate, they cut it with, like, or water it down in
or
a way.
Flavors
with,
or something.
With a, like, it's supposed to be, like a glycerin, I think, or something like that, that is okay. But people are substituting that with, like, another kind of oil, like a...
Vitamin
E or whatever, and that is what's causing the, but I don't know. This is, again, I have no, I am not in any way, like,
I guess I feel like there is different categories, because don't some people vape where it's not actually an illegal substance, it's just some sort of weird liquid that they just enjoy?
Yeah, like, to, like, that's like the nicotine, those ones
that
are like,
they're like cigarettes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what.
And those are the ones that the, like, they're, I think the company Juul is getting sued because they're, it seems like they're targeting and marketing to kids.
Because, like, seem like
when
that.
It's rainbow, like, what are the names of it? They're always like unicorn poop or something crazy like that. Or, and it's like,
we're on to you.
Come
there.
On. You know, and the flavors of, you know, I get it if you're switching from cigarettes to that. It's like,
it's
absolutely do that.
Yeah.
And, but those people don't want mango flavors. They're like, no, give me cigarette flavor, you know? Like, give me the good old. And they're like, all these, you know, weird flavors coming up. So, yeah, it's like that I think they're getting in trouble for.
I'll tell you what has a good flavor. Mm-hmm. Ritual vitamins.
Yes, you don't ever have to worry about being nauseous from those.
Right. Yes, Ritual vitamins have the flavor of mint. They smell like mint. Go into your house and whatever vitamins you're using, open up that
bottle. Oh my gosh, that is such a good, yes, just smell it.
Take a whiff and you'll be thinking, I need something that doesn't smell like garbage.
Oh God, what is that?
It's so bad.
Ew.
Ritual, like I said, is the mintiest, wonderful flavor, and it is time release, so you won't get sick, and it'll help you fill in the gaps in your diet. So if you're missing vitamins or whatever, they got you covered. Omega-3, D3, whatevs. Mm. They have, what's it called? Prenatal.
Yes.
They have a prenatal.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Vegan-friendly, sugar-free, all that jazz. And it's a subscription, so it comes to your house, and as soon as you need more, there they are. Mm. So you never miss any, and it's just great.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. I take them every day.
Like a ritual.
So BetterHelp doesn't happen overnight, and right now Ritual is offering our listeners 10% off during your first 3 months. Fill in the gaps in your diet with Essential for Women, a small step that supports a healthy foundation for your body. Visit ritual.com/braincandy to start your ritual today. That's 10% off during the first 3 months at ritual.com/braincandy. You know, I often have these moments when I'm actually partaking in whatever our partner's products are.
Yes, yes.
Where I'm like, I don't feel like I'm doing a good enough job of convincing people that
how
I actually
it
use it and I love it. Even I sent off my, remember when we were working with Meissen knives?
Yes.
Beautiful
oh,
chef's
I love
knife.
Those.
I sent mine off to get the free sharpening
service. Oh my God, I need to do that. Yeah.
And it came back and it was like butter. It was like,
oh my God, I'm
this
doing that this
so
week.
This is so awesome.
That is so fantastic.
So
I bought a new knife block, so this will be really, got to put it in there fresh.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it was this feeling of like, people don't know I really love this stuff.
Anyway. Well, and that I only need two knives. I mean, we're like doing an ad for them and like not even, they're not even a sponsor.
But
in this
it's
episode.
Actually true.
Right.
So whatever.
Right. Okay, but speaking of chefs and cooking, I got a funny story for you.
Okay, let's hear it.
Did you hear about
Sarah's the- really trying to make up for this.
Right. No, but because like, I was like, God, there is so much great stuff out there. And what the hell was wrong with me? And I like heard all these stories, but you know, didn't even like bring them up.
Sorry,
so Sarah. I was reading this thing on Vice. And there is a chef. His name is Marc Vairat. He probably has some fancy name. I think he's in France.
This is a, okay.
French chef.
Mm-hmm.
It's in France. The Michelin star people knocked him down a star because they accused him of using cheddar cheese in his soufflé.
No, yes. No, no, no.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Did he deny all charges?
Yes. and got really angry and said, you have to remove me from your Michelin book now. I don't even want to be a part of this because you're like, and they said, no, we're not going to do that. And
this
they like dishonored
a
him.
A real scandal.
And he's suing them.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm
he's
mad
suing,
about it. I don't even know
right?
if he's cheddar.
Right? Oh my, right.
What he's, the fuck is wrong with cheddar?
The court hearing is set for November 27th.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
How dare they? How can they say they know what's in that recipe? It's supposed to be
point.
About taste yeah. anyway. It could be cow dung. If it's delicious, give them the goddamn star.
Good point. Who cares,
yes.
right? That's also what I was saying. I'm like, does the
Is
ingredient, like,
yeah.
you can't use cheddar cheese? Like, have they had macaroni and cheese?
Exactly. Have you ever had American? Because guess what? It's
delicious. It's really my favorite cheese.
I know.
Which
Are
is
we
awful.
Kidding?
Yeah.
Which is awful.
But
that's
isn't that crazy?
I actually, if they do have rules about ingredients, what's worthy and what isn't.
That's a really good question.
Then
because there's not a lot of information in this fight. It's like a
pretty
quick article.
Or do you think it was, he claimed it was whatever, Manchego, uh-huh. and then they are saying that the problem is he lied.
So it says that he claimed that the Michelin inspector accused him of putting cheddar cheese in a French souffle, an allegation that he strongly denied. So maybe the traditional French
yeah.
souffle doesn't
yeah.
have that ingredient. And it said how they dared to say we put cheddar in our souffle of Roblochon, Beaufort, and Tomé. I'm pronouncing every one of those wrong, I'm sure. They're cheeses.
And okay,
he said at the
okay.
time, they've insulted our region. My employees went crazy. We have eggs from our chickens. We milk our cows. Two botanists pick our plants every morning. And it said that he was like so depressed
of
after
course.
Hearing this that they wanted to remove it. And
oh my gosh.
They, like, yeah. And it's like, Virat is still salty about the cheddar cheese thing, which I was like,
I
like you,
yes.
Vice Magazine. Well done. Well played.
That would really make me upset if I were him.
Yes. Well, and he's even more upset because the Michelin star people are anonymous. You don't know that they've come if they've done a real thing. So he says he never saw the inspector. He doesn't know who this person is. And I feel like not knowing that
yeah.
would be real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really crazy. Maybe they could come to an agreement where they come back or something and try it again.
Like remake it. Yeah. It's like that reminds, wasn't there a movie where that happened where I feel like it was a chef.
Was it
yeah,
like a food
yeah,
critic?
Yes.
Yeah. That rings a bell.
Yeah. With
I
a
mean,
good actor too.
I guess it's real touchy subject.
Yeah. If that's like.
I do love
that,
it though.
Right.
I would love to eat that. What is it? A quiche? You said?
French souffle.
Oh, souffle.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's probably delicious.
I'm sure.
I don't even like melted cheese.
Well, I want to go to that place in Thailand. I think it's in Bangkok where the lady got a Michelin star and she's just on the street. Like
no.
she's just a, what do they call that?
Vendor. Street vendor?
Yeah. Street like vendor of whatever cart? Thai food. And she's incredible. And she got a Michelin star. So that's why I'm surprised that they're so rigorous in this
yeah.
instance, because I thought it was just like, if it's delicious.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's weird. But maybe it's the, oh, that's true. Because it's not like it's a rating system. It's not like it's, you get five. You know,
it is though. I
is
think,
it?
Yeah. It's
you
like
get five stars?
You can have, mm-hmm.
up to five.
Yeah.
Or is
so
it?
It sounds like they removed one of his stars. Like they took him down
yes.
a rank, but he still had a Michelin
Yeah.
Whatever.
4-star Michelin restaurant.
I'd still eat it.
Yeah. Same with that.
That is
food
bonkers.
No,
good one, Sarah.
Food.
You totally redeemed yourself.
Yes. Woo,
I love
good.
That. I feel like it was just you.
Yeah. That's
I was
funny.
Even looking over my notes and be like, why did we talk about that?
Oh my God. I don't even remember what we talked about.
You would be horrified.
So I don't even. No, it's better I don't. It's like one
I
of those things I don't want to know.
I
Let's
almost
want to
release it just on Patreon and be like, listen to how bad
the
this
garbage.
Is.
Garbage. Isn't that funny? Oh my God.
Like it could be bonus crap
right.
content.
Yeah. If people would die and
our
see like what
would be like, oh great. We paid
Thank
for
you
the
so much for putting me through that pain.
The refuse.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll tell you an article I read, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
And it was about the author of the article had been to an inpatient mental health facility for mm-hmm. a few days.
Like voluntarily was.
I believe she
okay.
was. Voluntarily, but she needed help.
Okay,
like it was
got
a true, she was a true patient. And she was writing about her experiences and how, because of the concerns that medical industry has about the patients, they have to be real careful about what you can bring in, of course.
Of course.
And what you can use and when you can use it, like razors and
yeah.
stuff like that.
Yeah.
But she was writing this very insightful piece about how important for some people hygiene, makeup, self is a form of self-care.
Yeah, very much so.
Like when that process of like, I wash my face and then I put my moisturizer on and then I put makeup on.
Yeah.
For some people, that's a way of making them feel like they can face the day.
Correct.
And so by not allowing people to partake in that ritual, that can be counterproductive to the process of healing, which I thought was so important because I would feel like that. Especially if you have bad skin or something and you just feel like...
Even just whatever your daily routine is. Yeah. I even think about, you know, when we go on the challenge, it can kind of feel like a crazy house sometimes.
Truly.
And the things that you normally do, your rituals, your normal routine is taken away.
Disrupted, yeah.
And you can feel the effects of that. And I recognize that I've tried so hard to kind of recreate my regular routine where, like, I get up early, I make the coffee.
We both would do that.
We did our crossword puzzles. We created a new routine because there's something that feels really comforting and soothing about having a little predictability in an unpredictable environment.
Yeah, because it's about control and feeling like, especially in a psych ward or the challenge, they have removed your any autonomy that you have.
Correct.
You don't know what time it is. You don't know where you're going that day.
It's the same.
Yeah. It really is.
Right.
And I feel
you're
like
a little terrified
of
the people around you. Like, what could they do?
Yes. In like a way that I wasn't prepared for. But it's true. And I've really related to this. And I thought that it would be nice if these facilities could find a way to balance the safety of the patients with those needs. Even listen to this. Floss is restricted.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was like a strangulation concern, but it really is just that teeny tiny little piece of metal.
What?
To cut the, you know, on the packaging. Come on. I think it's okay.
I think so too.
And like, there's got to be a way around that.
Yeah.
So, like, they could make a dispenser that just gives you a bit.
And they also have those, just like, okay, right. Because I didn't put it. Like, just use the individual use, single use ones. Come on now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that
and, you
was
know,
shocking.
I wonder. This is like a good, you know, I feel like some place should try something like this where maybe there's a, you know, and you kind of do see this when you have like inpatient facilities that are maybe like residential treatment centers for addiction where they give them a routine where they're like, this is your chores. This is what you do during the day because they know that that's important. So maybe kind of something to allow the person to create a ritual or like.
I mean, there just should be a workaround.
Yeah, I get that. Well, I remember when my mother-in-law, she suffered from bipolar disorder, still does.
Yeah.
And she had an episode and we had to, you know, 5150 and she was held in 72 hours.
Yeah.
And I came to the hospital and washed her hair and did her makeup.
That's nice.
And
of you.
It mattered a lot.
Yes,
to
right?
her.
Because she's a person.
Yes. And it changed, like just having, feeling like, after everything she went through and like just being a mess with, you know, all that, having somebody wash her hair and put some eyeshadow on and put some lipstick on and give her some eyebrows made her feel like the symptoms were reduced.
I like when I see articles, though, where it's like, I never thought of that. That's a really good point.
Yeah.
And I'm glad I know. Just, I don't know, just to know.
Yeah.
But medical professionals certainly have a hard job and we know that and we want to celebrate them. And one of the companies that we work with is called Figs. And they do a fantastic job of making the uniforms for healthcare professionals soft and practical so that they can put the most innovative technical tools to use while they're wearing them. And they're not itchy. And they can wear them all day and feel totally comfortable and look their best. And Figs is so cool because they give scrubs to healthcare providers in need around the world through their Threads for Threads initiative. I love that. And I feel like this would make a great gift for if you know somebody who's a dental hygienist or a nurse or whatever. It's such a great gift. So whether you're one of the awesome humans that works in healthcare or someone that you want to say thanks to, they're deserving folks. And Figs is going to make that easy by providing you with 15% off your first purchase by using our code BRAINCANDY to get ready to love your scrubs. Head to wearfigs.com, WEARFIGS.com and enter our code BRAINCANDY at checkout. And I have some of their products and I can attest to the quality and softness and all that. So they're really nice.
Lovely.
You know what's funny? I read this book. It's a famous book about prisons. I think it's called Hot House, The Hot House, and it's about Leavenworth Prison.
Where's that?
It's in Illinois, I think.
Oh, yeah. Is it like a serious one?
It's a serious one, and this was notable because the journalist got unlimited access for 2 years. Whoa. Could come and go as he pleased, had no guards with him.
Whoa.
I mean, it was like serious ethnography where you go in and you are in it.
In it.
And he took these risks of like they could
hurt
him if they wanted. So that's what made the book famous. But when I was reading it, truly, right hand to God, and I know it sounds insane, but I think Sarah will understand. I kept thinking of The Challenge.
I'm sure. Yes.
Like it's just a more extreme version.
Yeah.
And I was just like,
how about even like how you, your relationship with food, how you eat, how it's like, I got to get my fair share before anybody, you know?
How you're always like,
on guard.
Yeah, side-eyeing, like, what do they mean by that? Yeah. And is this the part of the game, or are they really my friend, you know? Like, where it's so fucked up.
It keeps you in the most reactive place, and how can anything, like, it's basically your limbic system is the only thing running the entire time and in either scenario, either situation.
So anybody that lives in that situation in a prison obviously is not being equipped. If they're going to be released, they're just not going to be ready.
No.
And probably will have the same problems when they come out because it heightens and exacerbates what was clearly already a problem.
Yes.
And they were even describing sometimes when guys would get out and it would just like be, they would implode they would be ready to fight all the time when it's just like normal life.
Because that's what happens when that system gets activated all the time. You do one of two things. You see red flags everywhere when they aren't, or you don't see any at all.
Right.
Because you've been so used to it, and then things that are dangerous don't even register as dangerous. So you put yourself in really dangerous situations.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's terrible. And believe me, I don't know the answer, but I just think, well, good Lord, this system is broken. Real bad.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just thought of that because you were talking about the psych ward.
Yeah.
Now it's just like, oh, you know, reality TV.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I've been getting a lot of inquiries about, when are you going to go back on The Challenge? When are you going to... I'm going to answer everybody right now. Never. Not going to happen.
Really?
Oh, never.
They say never say never.
No,
Sarah.
I can... Well, but this is the... What is it? The exception that proves the rule? This is it.
What makes you so sure? I mean, I already know all this, but I just find it fun to ask you.
Oh, man. It's like the same as if you were to, like, in a weird way, like, live your life, graduate college, get married, do all this stuff, and then, like, go, I think I want to go to a high school party.
Prom.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, right.
You'd be like, no, prom, okay, that was real fun then.
Yes.
But it is weird at this new place now, and I see it in a completely different light, and I'm looking at everybody's interactions different, and, like, there isn't a desire to go over there and get drunk at the punch bowl with, you know, whatever, because, like, I don't – no. I see too much of what's going on, you know?
Yeah. I'm even – so you know how on Twitter, I just tweet about politics. Yeah. I don't tweet about reality TV or my life.
Right.
And yet, every so often, I'll tweet something that rubs somebody the wrong way, and they'll be like, this just happened the other day. Really? What about the I Heart Tanya game, since you're such a great person?
Oh, that does. Like, yeah, okay.
Oh, my God. Did they think it just happened, or did they know that was 15 years ago and really
come on,
not applicable in this story? I wonder, though, is it like a cognitive dissonance for them where they... we're stuck in that moment in their brain.
Yes.
So they think we're still how we were when we were 18, 20, 22.
I saw a little bit of this when people could not wrap their head around the idea that I didn't live in the city that my real world was filmed in.
They thought you were from Brooklyn?
Like, but they would see me in California and they'd be like, oh my gosh, Sarah, what are you doing here?
Oh, yes.
And I was like,
so funny. Do you think it's Brooklyn, though? Or do they just think, I can't believe I'm seeing this person that's supposed to be in my TV?
I think it would, because they would say, like, oh, I thought you lived in Brooklyn. Oh, I thought you lived in whatever or stayed there. What? I don't know what it was. It happened more when I was, like, fresh off the show. But the idea, I think that is that cognitive dissonance. In my mind, you are this here in this way, and then I see you, and it doesn't match. And so...
Yeah.
what?
Yeah, I could understand having the thought because I watch a lot of TV and I can see how your brain would do that.
Yeah.
But then I'd stop.
Invite think. Rational thoughts in. Yeah. Right.
Be like, oh, right.
Right.
Of course.
Right. And they kind of do that. That's, okay. You know what's funny? That happens.
Not on Twitter. It doesn't.
Right, right. Because you can't see them in real life. This is usually an interaction that always, an interaction I have in real life. And uh-huh. then I go, oh, no, I just did my, and they go, oh, right. That okay. is how it goes.
We got to snap okay. them back into
yes,
reality.
Yes, yes, yes. Ooh, this is good. What? Man, this is a better episode.
Wait till you hear the other one. We'll be posting that on patreon.com/brainpandy.
People are going to join just for that garbage. It's funny.
Okay, moving on, mm-hmm. since we've, like, yeah. beat that dead horse.
Yeah. Did you hear that they successfully taught rats how to play hide and seek?
Did I hear that?
It's brand new, I guess, this study came out, research came out. Also, what for what? Why? Why are we doing this?
Wasn't there a reason?
I'm sure, but, like...
Like, I kind of remember seeing that, and there was some explanation of what they were trying to determine. Wasn't it about... like they wanted to know whether the rats like could feel surprise or satisfaction. Wow. I feel like they were looking.
They taught them to play with humans. Like, so human hides yeah. and then the rat goes and finds them. And also they trained them so that the rat can hide and the human can go find them. But the funniest part about the whole thing is that in most animal studies, they use food as the incentive. They did it yeah. this time. They used tickles. Because rats love being tickled.
Shut up.
I will not.
Get out of here.
And so some researcher,
that
was their job.
Adorable.
Adorable. Makes me like rats. I might just change my position on things that scurry. No.
Well, pet rats are clean and nice, and they're very smart. I just don't want the dirty ones that, go through your garbage and stuff. Blah, blah,
blah, blah. Gross. That leave that oily residue, that whatever that is.
Even, on their tail, whatever yeah. that lubrication
yeah.
is.
Yeah, that's the stuff I don't like. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah.
But even if we were trying to determine, can they feel surprise or can they feel satisfaction or whatever, yeah. Your point still remains. Why?
They were looking into, what's play in animals?
Okay,
animals engage in play?
Okay.
And by our definition of play, play must be spontaneous and voluntary. And so can they create that? Can you create a situation where animals play voluntarily and, spontaneously?
Yeah.
And, I don't know. That's what they did with these six young rats, What
Man,
can you do?
Scientists are tireless in their efforts.
It said that they really enjoyed playtime.
Who doesn't?
Yeah.
Don't you? That's what I call sex.
And I guess it does give us a lot of information about it. They were hooking them up to electrodes, see what part of their brains got excited with play and social interaction and all this stuff.
I've read some scholarly books about play, and it is fun to read because they kind of
that is cute.
Yeah, in my field in religion, we have trouble telling people here's what religion is because it's kind of broad and weird and can vary. It's like that with play.
Right.
Where you're like, is this play? And they have to try to pinpoint.
Yes.
I think that's one of the hardest things about scholarship is being precise and accurate. And that's one of the things that I was struck by when I read the books. I was like, they kind of don't know exactly. Yeah.
And that's maybe why you test all these animals and find out, what is the difference? Because then it leaves me, what separates us, this, desire to know, are we the same as all?
Well, for sure, those monkeys and gorillas love playing.
Yeah.
They have a grand old time.
And then the more we find out about these human qualities that, oh, my God, there's so much that I've heard this past week about bees having memories and understanding if they're good memories or bad memories.
Yeah.
So then it makes me think... how should we be treating animals? Should we have zoos? Should we be eating these things? If I get it, survival, yes, that's important for us. But do we really need to be putting them in cages and all this stuff? And,
The book that you had in the book club last month by mm-hmm. Jessica Ragg, The Butcher mm-hmm. Girl on the Block. Mm-hmm. She's a female butcher, also known as a butcher. And I need to stop
I
doing
love when
that.
People say that, also known as a...
Because
whatever.
It's notable, yeah, but you right. don't want to have to mm-hmm. say. But, and she surprisingly perhaps supports, being mindful about eat what you eat and also limiting your meat, which you wouldn't maybe expect. But I also just read this book. I had to look it up quickly so I got the title right, by Melissa Darabian from the Food Network. She won Next Food Network Star.
Yeah.
And she just wrote a book called Tasting Grace, God's Invitation to, what is it?
Well, that's cool.
It's God's Invitation into Deeper Connection and Satisfied Hunger. I really love this book, even though I'm not overtly religious, because of those concepts where it can translate even if you're secular, about really being aware of what you're putting in your body and all that stuff. I just think it's good to be mindful.
I do too.
I have to tell you, I've been playing a lot of Best Fiends
mindfully. Oh my God, me too. Do you want to see what level I'm on? Who I've collected and who I've already upgraded? Come on, I didn't even know what, this is fun and dangerous.
What do you like about it?
Like, I love the cute little stories. I love the cute little characters. Yeah. Oh my gosh, it is real fun.
Yes.
And it makes me think, but also kind of giggle and have fun. And it just feels like...
Play. See?
It's play. I love it.
It's proper play. It's a break from all of your depressing life and the news and all of that. Mm-hmm. If you just want to have some fun, they have the most adorable character collection and they have really fun puzzles. Like Sarah said, they make you think, but you're totally casual, just having fun. It's great for adults. And it's just a nice break from life. Yeah. And they always have new levels and events, so it never gets old. They keep it interesting. And, it's just really fun to play. It has 5-star rating on
I get it.
The App Store. Sarah's going to leave hers
in a minute. Already did that.
You can engage your brain with fun puzzles and collect tons of cute characters. 5-star rated mobile puzzle game on the Apple App Store and Google Play. Download free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's Friends without the R. Best Fiends.
Yes.
Okay. But those the books that we've read recently, that Tasting Grace and The Butcher, The Girl on the Block, it's such a good reminder. Right.
The animals are
animals are people too.
Totally. And but the end of this article talked about how one of the most interesting things from the study was that these rats would play with humans that to them are frickin' giants.
Yeah.
In fact, I didn't really understand what that would be like, or what that, because we, you know, can you really conceptualize what something 60 times your size or whatever is like? No, until you are next to that. And when I went to the General Sherman, the largest tree in the world, they say that your experience standing next to this tree is the same as what a mouse experiences standing next to a 6-foot tall man. And I went, oh my God, that's huge. It made me feel so bad for any little mouse, and why the hell would I be scared of it? It would be true. Like this tree being like,
yeah, but more importantly, why aren't they scared of us sometimes?
They
seem pretty darn bold.
No, it's the ones, oh my gosh, this is, my brother told me this so long ago, that when you see a mouse that doesn't have that fear, they have that parasite in their brain. You know the thing they get from cats that's like the, because it gets rid, it deactivates or does something that affects the amygdala, like the fear center of their brain. So they run around the middle of the room, where a rat or a mouse that doesn't have it will.
Oh yeah. Go along the edges.
Yes.
Ooh, that is freaky.
Real freaky.
So I've been around like rabid mice all my life.
That's so gross. That gives me creepy goosebumps everywhere.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess they are fearful normally.
Yeah.
Except for the parasitic ones.
Oh my God, gross.
Thanks a lot for sharing that story. Have you read those articles where they encourage people, it's describing what it's like to go a whole year without shopping or...
I've imagined, not in depth, but...
There was one in the New York Times. It was really good. And named a couple things that she got out of it that I wouldn't have expected.
So a year without shopping, does that mean what do we...
In her case, she did it just clothes and electronics and stuff like that.
Not buying anything extra.
She could go out to eat.
Okay.
And things like that. She could hang out with people and she could buy gifts and books, but she wouldn't buy clothes or shoes and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And she was saying that, you know how when you have a big event coming up and you think, I got to get a nice dress for that or whatever. And all the time you spend like perusing.
Yep.
And she got all that time back.
Yep.
She noticed that. And I wouldn't have thought of that.
I understand this on a very personal level.
Because you're a perusal person.
Really almost the opposite when I realized, so I had some, I think it was a bachelorette party or something like something where in my mind I was like, I have to get a new outfit for this. And I turned out I didn't have enough time. And like, I think I did my makeup in like 5 minutes. I had such a great time. I realized in that moment that what I was wearing and what my makeup looked like affected the outcome of the event absolutely zero. And the stress that I was putting myself through in spending, like, if you enjoy it, if you like doing your makeup for an hour and like doing all that, but for me, it like added stress to my life.
Yeah.
So I realized, like, why am I doing that? Mm. Is it worth the effort? Is it worth worrying about what I'm going to wear and all this stuff? If I, the outcome is the same.
Well, let me just say that. If those people looked like you, they wouldn't be spending all that time doing makeup. Like, you could just show up with a burlap sack and everyone would be
happy. Well, you're so sweet, but I think that is
you should,
more of
I'm just saying, take advantage of that. The fact that, like, you really could just kind of, like, roll up.
Well, I think I'm going to start.
Yeah,
I have been
see?
Doing that.
Yeah.
I've been doing that on dates.
Whoa.
For real. There was one guy I went out with. And it makes it sound like I'm going out with like 50 dudes. There's like three for like everybody like chill and like, you know,
this is so, my favorite.
Oh my God. I like, it's not a lot. Okay. But so like, I was just running around and super busy that day. And it was like a Sunday afternoon. And I was like, here's the deal. You're going to get real casual, Sarah.
Oh yeah. I remember that. And he was fine.
Totally fine. Care. Neither did I. And I was like, wow, not spending all that time freaking out.
Yeah.
And then I did it for another date, like, did all that. And I was like, oh, it was much better when I just was, like, me, au naturel.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I threw on some
just
mascara because I'm not crazy.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It was just, like, my hair was wet. I was like, this is what you're going to get. So.
I could see that because the few times that I've sort of gone to a big event and been like, oh, my God, I got to wear something special, I just put the job on Sarah.
Yeah. Oh, I take it.
It is the best because she's, like, a fucking... What do you call those? Personal stylist.
Oh, I can shop for somebody
like,
else.
Here's
like,
100
no problem.
Possible dresses for you,
this
Suze.
This I do. Yes. Yeah.
And so that
my mom
is something you're very
stylist.
Good at. Yeah. And I could see how it could be time consuming if you did it all the time for yourself, which I know you don't.
But I don't even like doing it. Like, I can dress other people, but I can't. It's like I can't do it for myself.
It's work.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and also because in my mind, this, you know, we've talked about, even in the beginning of this episode, how sometimes our memories are kind of stuck in one period of time, like other people's memories of us.
Yeah.
But I think in my mind, some of the my mind, when I go shopping, when I go, like, it's a lot of negative stuff. I had a lot of body image issues. I had really uncomfortable experiences in dressing rooms that were really, like, a lot of anxiety with shopping for me.
Yeah. Well, and this is another thing she brought up, which is if you're thinking about what dress should I wear to this thing, you're going to think those thoughts that you just mentioned. You might also start comparing yourself to the person that might be there.
Yep.
Oh, they're going to have Christian Louboutins or whatever fancy thing. And so you start comparing yourself to people that have more than you or you perceive to have more than you.
Mm-hmm.
But when you aren't doing that, you start to realize what other people don't have and what maybe you're blessed with that other people aren't. And so it shifts who you're comparing your life to, I think.
100%.
I thought that was such a good point.
Really good point.
Because on social media and all that, it can be very tempting to be like, they have a better car, or they have better shoes, or whatever. I don't know what people compare. But and you can kind of put a halt to that. And then she said one more thing. Oh, she just mentioned that thing that we all do where, like, maybe we'll buy a makeup item or a shampoo or something, and we don't really love it,
right?
And we just throw it back under our sink and never use it.
You mean, like, 90% of the stuff under my sink right now?
Yeah, she's like, just go ahead and use it. It's fine.
Right.
You know,
this is something that I think women do where they don't give themselves permission to enjoy. We've even talked about this in, like, you know, that candle that like,
and, like,
oh, I'm not going to burn
stuff
it.
You gave
yes.
Me. Yeah.
Oh, I can't use it because like it's too nice. It's special. No, get out the nice. Like my therapist told me a long time ago, She said, when you're like going to sit down and do something, you know, like be mindful with anything that you do. And if you're going to do something like make a cup of tea, do pretend like you're your own guest coming to your house and make it with care. Take out the nice teacup, put a little cute saucer under it, make it special for yourself. The things that we do for others, we don't do take the time. It takes all of 10 seconds to pick, and you're picking the cup already. Just pick the one that's not the, you know, I'll just use the extra.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just like, no.
Yes.
Give yourself permission to like, you know.
Do it properly.
Yeah. And I think that there's like a feeling of kind of like envy that I have when I see women who do that.
Mm.
And they're the first instinct, and this is not me right now. This is like me however many years ago who thought this, where I would be, have like a, oh, well, they're so selfish. And look at them, how they like think it's all like, you know, oh, she gets this and this and this. And now I'm like, why shouldn't we?
Mm-hmm.
Why shouldn't we feel like that? Why shouldn't I allow myself to be, you know, treated well, real well? And
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't mean to derail the episode, but I have my dog here and Bo just tooted and it is stinky. There's so, you stink.
I feel like it's breath.
Maybe breath. What is the deal with that, Bo? Brush your GD teeth.
Let me just do a little palate cleanser for Bo and us and talk about how much we love The New Yorker, and we hope you're taking advantage of that awesome deal that they gave to us. I've been seeing so many great pieces that they've done on, well, of course, politics lately. Mm-hmm. There's been plenty to write
about.
But they've also done some really nice humor pieces, and there was even an article about perfumes, and it's just they have something for everyone. So if you have a topic that you're into, they have an article about it. Food, cartoons, popular culture, arts, the environment, and they're critically acclaimed, but it's not lofty. You can, no matter what, you can just learn from it, and you don't have to be fancy pants yourself. Just enjoy it. And they have a great deal. Get 12 weeks of The New Yorker for just $6 plus the exclusive tote. Go to newyorker.com/braincandy. Listeners save 50% when they enter our code braincandy. That's 12 weeks of The New Yorker, as you said on the episode that is now defunct, digital and hard copy.
Right.
And of course, that tote.
Terrible in the episode. Crushed the ads.
Right. We really did. And now we're having to recreate. It's fine. But yeah, take advantage of that with our code braincandy. Hilarious. Okay, now what? What do we got?
Mm-hmm.
You want to hear why facts don't change our minds? Or do you have...
Yeah, I want to hear that for sure.
Well, we all know that to be true. And if we really think about our own behavior, we can see how we are the same. But it was talking about... Ooh, this was interesting. It described in the article, and this was in, I believe, The Atlantic. And it was saying how they did a study with suicide notes, and they told people, like, to try to guess which of the suicide notes were truly written by people who ended up taking their own life and which ones weren't. And this was all a ruse, which I don't want to participate in these studies.
I don't like that either.
I hate when they do that.
That's, like, messed up. You need to give them therapy afterwards, for real.
Well, and it just feels like I would be thinking too much in there, like, what they didn't. Is that true?
Yeah.
Is that a lie?
Mm.
Maybe they should do a study just on me and my own paranoia. But anyway, so then they told them their results. Like, okay, you got 9 out of 10 right or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And those were a lie too.
And I can kind of see where we're going with this. Okay, yes.
Okay, so then they asked people, like, they said, I think they said, that was not true. We were just joking. How well do you really think you did? And when they had told someone they had done really well, they still believed they had done really well.
Uh-huh, okay.
Even though it was revealed to them, we were lying. Tell us what you really think, how you did. And if they had told someone that they did really bad, then they still thought
they did.
I wouldn't do well on this. I failed. So, like, basically what they're trying to say is once something has been established in our brain, like I'm good at this or I'm not good at this, it's very hard.
Yes.
To
correct.
Yeah.
And, oh my God, I was just talking about this kind of stuff with the people at my office, that when we have holes in the who we are, holes in our identity, we fill those holes with the words and influences of others. We fill those holes with how people define us. So if we feel it's like, terrible. I don't know what I know on this. Well, somebody else said that I failed. Well, I guess I failed. Because if that hole will be filled. So you think of a child who's like developing their identity and who they are and has a lot of holes. And yeah. You have a critical parent who's like, you're
the worst.
The worst. Yeah. You, that, whatever it is.
I think of just those reading groups were all placed into it in like second grade.
Oh,
we
my
all
gosh.
Know who the dum-dums are.
For sure.
And so that sticks with you.
Yes, it does.
It took me my whole life to be like, wait, I'm not stupid.
Right.
I went to a private school where some people donated a lot of money, and of course their kid's going to be in the special group, and I'm fucking white trash. I'm going in the dummies.
Oh, God.
But I didn't realize all those years that wasn't a reflection of who I am.
Oh, man.
But we do that to kids often, well, as you're saying.
And we have to have that aware. I mean, like really look and say, who am I? And what am I? What defines me? And what, like, how do I want to fill in those holes? And is that really true?
When this
counter
is, I think you and I have talked about this, how whoever, your family's done this, mine has too.
Yep.
Whoever you were when you were like 10. They think you're still that
Correct.
Even when you're fucking 40.
Right.
And so those labels are really hard to undo familially, not just individually.
Yes.
And it sucks.
I mean, I was saying this to somebody the other day that like our brain, let's forget about the context. Let's forget about all like, let's just look at it as this machine that's job is to create connections.
Mm-hmm.
Connection, 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 connection.
Yeah.
That's what's happening. And when there's a connection between, you know, this thing I do and what somebody else labels it, that connection becomes stronger and stronger. And the only way to break that is to create a new connection.
Mm-hmm.
If not, the default system is that's like what, you know, if I tell you that the desk that we're, you know, this desk over here is blue and it's really brown, but I've told you it's blue your entire life.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to point to that and you'd be like, that's blue.
Yeah.
And it would take a long time, a lot of training to see it different and to change that. And you'd have to, and then the first few times you're like, nope, it's blue. And you have to snip that
yeah,
connection.
Yeah.
But that has to be
it's really hard.
Such a, like, you have to have so much awareness and it has to be such a mindful thing. It doesn't just happen.
Yeah. And that's really hard.
Yes.
Especially for folks who, they have a lot of crap going on.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're not like, oh, I better fix my brain wires.
Right. But it's easier said than done. Like, it really is. That's the thing that's, like, so hopeful. It's like our brain is, you can trick it so easy.
I like the thought of that, but how do you mean?
So like, for example, if I'm on the challenge, this happened all the time on the challenge.
Yeah.
People would see me and they'd be like, wow, she's so excited. She's so excited
well, that's
to
accurate.
Do. No, this is what I tell people. That was not, you know what you're seeing right there? When I'm like, yeah, let's do this. I'm so pumped.
You're trying to convince yourself.
Yes.
For
I was
real?
Yes.
You swear?
I hand to God, the one that I did it the most on was the very final challenge with Jordan where we were scaling down the building. I did a 15-minute power walk around the building with my arms in like the
ridiculous.
Victory pose because I knew I was like, if I tell my brain and my body through my body language, send all of the physical messages that
yeah.
I'm excited,
yeah.
then that feeling of nerves, my brain will relabel as excitement. It's the same physical feeling that we get when we're going on a first date or jumping out of an airplane. But the first date one, because of the context, we go, ooh, this is fun and exciting. I may be a little bit nervous, but it's good.
Yeah.
Then we're standing on the edge of a plane about ready to jump off and we're like, fuck this. This is terrifying. This is all bad. This is fear.
Yeah.
Same physiological experience.
Right. Right.
So if we can relabel that and just really keep doing that, you are safe, you are fine, you are capable, you are whatever it is, you are like.
I remember doing that when I had to go up for stand-up.
There you go.
It was like, I remembered reading that if you tell yourself you're excited and not nervous, that you will have a better feeling. I mean, it probably did help, but I mean,
yeah,
you're fighting with.
Correct.
your yes. brain who's like,
And we know that scientifically, and this is true, the pencil test is the easiest one where you hold a pencil in your mouth
yeah.
and it forces your mouth into a smile.
Yeah.
It will raise people's reported happiness.
Yeah.
Just by physically doing that.
Yeah.
So the way, and there's a great book by Bessel van der Kolk called The Body Keeps the Score.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about how our body is the thing that remembers.
Yeah.
And how that's why triggers are a thing. That's why, like, God, this
is. Well,
and
that's why
like,
they say action precedes attitude.
Yes.
So if you want to feel whatever.
Yes.
Then you have to fucking fake it.
Correct.
I mean, you do.
This is, the job interviews is another great place where you see it, where you're, say you're at a group interview, or like you're waiting in a room to, and you're all going in to be interviewed one at a time. Mm-hmm. And you look around and there are half of the group is slumped over, you know, maybe like looking with their shoulders, like hunched, like looking at their phone, looking down in a very like, what's
defeated.
The word? Defeated position.
Yeah.
And then you have somebody else who's standing with their shoulders back, who's like looking powerful. That person will do better in the interview.
Yeah.
For a million reasons. If you go into the bathroom and you do like the victory pose, arms in the air, like, you know, that pose is seen in people. Even people who are blind make that pose in the Special Olympics when they win.
Oh, that's
they
adorable.
Still do it, which shows you it's a universal, it's something that's inside of us that without having any visual cues that that's what you're supposed to do when you win.
Yeah.
Your body will naturally throw your arms up in the air and do that. It is a thing. So if we can do that mm-hmm. and tell our body, yes, I just won.
Yeah.
Then the action will, you'll win.
That's great advice. And the importance in the article was pointed out because this idea of like certainty, when we think something's true, it kind of like, it can have unintended consequences. So like when they ask people to guess on a map where where Ukraine is, the further their error was, uh-huh. the more inclined they were to say we should go to war.
Whoa.
You know, where like you don't know a lot, but you have like these
strengths. That has a lot of,
I mean,
the less we know about
you should
people,
see us looking
more,
at each
I
other.
I know,
we're like,
oh God, that's an in-group, out-group thing. Oh
yeah,
my God,
so
this is so,
that's
so much.
Important to remember. And then it was also talking about how we mistake. So if, let's say I said, how does a toilet work?
Mm-hmm.
Because the toilet is so well designed and we use it all the time, we believe in our mind that we understand how it works.
Right.
You know? So it's almost like we mistake familiarity uh-huh. with certainty or with expertise.
Yeah.
I hate when people do that, but I mean, it's quite common.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
So it's all sort of compacted into the same article describing how our brains have these quirks yeah. that if you're just aware of, then maybe you can...
Yeah. And just take some time, like... Yeah, what does this make me feel about myself? What labels am I putting on? Like, I like to use the kind of like, I don't know, term or expression. Am I zoomed in or am I zoomed out?
Yeah.
When you're zoomed in, there's really not a lot you can see.
Yes.
But if I zoom out and I just look at this
yeah.
from a bird's eye view, what yeah. happened, whether that, and I don't even mean like, I mean, what happened in your week? What happened in the experiences yeah. you had growing up that could be making you feel like this right now?
Yeah.
Then we give ourselves a lot more compassion.
But that's
permission.
Not our inclination, which is the trouble.
Right.
You have to be
very purposeful.
Like, okay, I'm going to take a look at the yes. big picture here.
And everything around us tells us to be zoomed in. Like we're, you know, I feel like commercials and advertising and everything, and you're not good enough, and social media and all yeah. this stuff kind of keeps us zoomed in.
Yeah.
I got to focus on the wrong things.
Yeah.
Yes.
One thing that can't zoom in, but you don't need it to, is your Ring security system.
I have the video of the people who...
Oh, my God.
Dude.
Sarah was telling me this story about...
My God.
...a Ring device.
Yes.
My God. Who would have thought?
Can you believe this one? A Ring device was stolen, but don't even worry because the Ring people were on it so fast.
Yeah.
They found out who did it. The security cameras did everything they were supposed to. And they're going to catch them.
And there's actually footage of
yes.
these bozos.
Oh, it's so great.
See, that's what's great about the Ring
system.
It's
the best.
You always know what the heck's going on at your door. You know if you get a package delivery or a surprise visitor because you'll get an alert and you're able to see, hear, and speak to them all from your phone thanks to the HD video and two-way audio features on the devices. So you're good to go if somebody's stupid enough to try to steal it. Well, they'll get theirs.
Yes.
And as a listener, you have a special offer on a Ring starter kit available right now with a video doorbell and motion-activated floodlight cam. The starter kit is everything you need to start building a Ring of security around your home. Just go to ring.com/braincandy. That's ring.com/braincandy. I'm super excited because I get to introduce my
Ooh,
friend
yeah.
and a wonderful guest on the show, Ken Levine. Ken is the host of the Hollywood and Levine podcast.
It's the best name. I mean, I just love that name.
It's so good. And he wrote for MASH. He wrote for Cheers. He wrote for Frasier. He wrote for Wings.
I mean,
all of the shows I love.
Shorter list is what he didn't write for.
True, there Sarah. He did not write for Unsolved Mysteries. That's all I know.
They write themselves.
And he is back on the show today, and I'm so excited because he has the best stories about the entertainment industry, what it's like to write for television, how television has changed over the years, which is a lot.
Oh, my God.
And, I mean, he's just a laugh a minute. You'll love him. Obviously, he wrote humor for freaking living. And he has a blog that you guys should check out by Ken Levine. So enjoy the interview and listen to his podcast, Hollywood and Levine. Welcome, Ken. So, Ken Levine, I can't believe I get to harass you again. This is the third time that you've indulged me. But I realized that in the other two interviews we did, I never got your origin story of how you got mixed up in this crazy biz. And I just wanted to find out where it all began.
Well, it actually began in radio. I grew up in Los Angeles. And, you know, I was always kind of a funny kid. And, you know, since I can't throw a spiral and I'm a terrible athlete, I watched the Dick Van Dyke Show, and there was this beautiful woman, Laura Petri, who was married to a comedy writer. And I thought, oh my God, wait, there may be another path for me. So since I was kind of funny, I figured, well, humor might be a way of getting girls, which for guys is the motivation for doing anything. So I did that. I went to UCLA, and then I got into Top 40 radio, and I was bouncing around the country playing the hits and kind of being Howard Stern before Howard Stern. And then I reached a point where I thought, man, do I want to be playing Pretty Woman by Roy Orbison when I'm 70?
Hey, Cousin you know? Brucey's still doing it.
I know, yeah. And I ask the same question every time I hear him. It's like, oh, my God, there by the grace of God, right. Go I. So I saw the movie Sleeper, which was the Woody Allen movie. Back before he was molesting anybody, and it was okay to like him. And I thought, wait a minute, what's wrong with this picture? Because at the time, I was doing the all-night show in San Bernardino and trying to be funny every break for the seven listeners, and four of those were probably 7-Eleven night managers who were mugged and tied up in the back. So what was I doing? And Woody Allen had sight gags and verbal gags and a story, and people were actually laughing. You know, you do something funny on the radio, you never hear any laughter.
Oh,
and so
right.
I thought, you know what? This might be a better path. And then I was in my Armed Forces Radio Reserve Unit, and a new member joined. We were at summer camp one year at Fort Carson, Colorado, and this was David Isaacs, and we got to talking, and he too kind of wanted to be a writer. So when I got back after summer camp, I got promptly fired. This was like a pattern with me in my radio career.
Really?
Yeah. Oh well, God. Because stations would change format. I was always on the other station.
Right.
Okay? I was never like on the big station. I was on the other station. So the ratings would come out and we would suck and I would get fired and then I'd have to move to Detroit or San Francisco. I mean, I hit some nice places along the way, Bakersfield. But I moved back to Los Angeles to live with my parents to send out more tapes. And then I called David and I said, hey, do you want to try writing something? And at the time, he was working at ABC in Hollywood in a long since abandoned department film. He would be sending film cans to affiliates and things like that. And so we decided to try writing, which was great, except for one thing. Neither of us had ever written anything before. We didn't even know what a script looked like. So I had to go down to Hollywood and go to Bennett's bookstore and pick up a copy of a TV script. They had them on the remainder table. This is Hollywood, okay? They don't have books. They have TV scripts.
Right.
And so I got an Odd Couple script and a Mary Tyler Moore show script. And you open it up and it goes, you know, interior Madison apartment day. And like, oh, that's how they do it. And then we just started writing. And we wrote a pilot first about two kids in college, which was the sum total of our life experience back then.
Right.
And it didn't sell. I think it would have cost $100 million in 1973 dollars to produce this. Avatar would have been easier.
Right.
But then a writer who had made it told us, well, you have to write spec scripts on speculation for existing shows. And so our favorite was the Mary Tyler Moore Show. So what we would do, since we never took any classes on writing, is I would get together with my partner David on Saturday nights, because the show was on Saturday night at 9 o'clock, and we would tape the show. And by tape, I meant I would hold a little silver dollar microphone up to the speaker.
No way.
And we would tape the show, and then we would go back and listen to it and write an outline based on the show. And we did that week after week after week. And eventually we started seeing the patterns. Eventually we started figuring out how they broke those stories. And then we wrote our own. But, you know, if I had a girlfriend, I probably never would be a writer today.
Oh, it's a blessing in disguise. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Fortunately, I was totally free on Saturday nights.
You were available.
I was available. So that's how we learned. And we sent scripts around, and we got rejected in a number of places. And this, again, is a true Hollywood story. My mom one day was playing golf with the story editor of The Jeffersons.
Oh, my God.
And she said to him, oh, you're a writer? My son is a great writer. And, of course, he's thinking, oh, Christ.
Right.
But he said, have him call me. So I did. I called, and he said, do you have a script? And I said, yes, we do. He says, okay, send me the script. If I like the script, we'll talk. And so I sent him the Mary Tyler Moore Show script. And he called back about a week later, said, this is really terrific. Come on in and pitch stories. And so we pitched stories to the Jeffersons. And long story short, they liked one and bought it. And we were on our way. And that's really how our career began.
What did that first yes feel like?
Oh, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And at the time, I gave up radio full time and was just going to be in LA and write spec scripts at night with David. So I needed a job. And I was teaching broadcasting at the KISS Broadcasting Workshop. But a station in San Diego invited me to come down and do weekends every weekend. So it's like, okay, I kept my hand in radio and I did that. And I got the call from him on Saturday, and I was at the radio station, I was on the air. And, you know, he said, we bought your script. I wanted to tell you, have a great weekend. Coming in on Monday, and we'll work on the story. And I hung up, and my record was over, and I had to go back on the air.
Oh, my God.
And so I turned on the mic, and I remember, you know, saying, B100 San Diego, it's 3:30, and I just sold a Jefferson's.
Oh, my God, you did not.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So I told the world, actually, before I told my partner.
Wow.
Then I called David. Yeah.
Do you still have that tape of when you found out and you announced it?
I don't know if I do or not. I've got a box of old cassettes, and it might be in there, but I would have to digitize it.
What a moment. Did you just feel like I've arrived and now everything's going to fall into place?
It was like my life was going to change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And
it did. It absolutely did. And we went in to meet with them, and at the time, they were doing the show out of Television City in Hollywood, and there was, like, a drive-on pass for us.
Oh, my God.
You know, and you walk in the lobby, and they let you into the elevator. It's like,
right.
Oh, my God.
You were
escorted
out.
We've arrived. We're at CBS.
I mean, yeah,
it was an incredible moment.
Yeah, you're the hotshot now. And as happy as you were, I'm so happy that your mom went golfing with that person because you created...
I'm glad she didn't beat him.
Right.
You know,
she had good
sense.
Because
things might have turned out differently if she had beaten him. Here's a funny story, more on the Jeffersons. So
yeah.
We get our story approved and we do our outline and they say, okay, you have 2 weeks to write the script,
okay.
Which is more than enough time. The only problem was that we were going to Army summer camp those 2 weeks.
Who was?
And it's not like jury duty where you can write in and go, you know, it's not convenient for me.
Yeah.
I'll do it in October.
Yeah.
No, you get on the bus and go. And so we wrote our first Jeffersons at night in the barracks.
Oh, my God.
Okay. You picture those, like, big barracks that you see in all those movies. And there's the guys playing craps and smoking dope and listening to Jimi Hendrix and everything. And we're sitting on one of the bunks going, Wheezy,
Wait.
You bring that over right now.
That's awesome, though. My
yeah.
God. And
yeah.
then you came
And we
back.
Had to break into an office to find a typewriter to type the script. Because we didn't have a typewriter.
This is
so
bonkers.
So at night, we had to, like, break into some office. We went into, like, some admin building, and we just kept, like, trying doors until we found one that was open.
On television's
we used our typewriter.
It.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
bonkers. What a
yeah.
life you've had. That was just the beginning of the crazy television world.
Right.
What do you think?
Right. I've been very blessed.
Yeah,
I every day, I am so grateful.
Well, and you have this crazy successful blog now where you are able to tell these stories about your career. Aren't you struck each time you write an entry to think how many stories and how much has happened in all these years that you've been doing it?
I do, and I also think, wow, it happened in a blink.
Yeah.
You know, it happens so fast. And I was very lucky in my career in many respects. But one was that I had great mentors, people like Larry Gelbart and James L. Brooks and the Charles Brothers and Jerry Belson and Gary Marshall. And so I've always felt this desire to pay it forward and to share my knowledge with younger writers and help younger writers whenever I can, because, like I said, I was just so lucky to not only learn from the best, but number two, be smart enough that I recognized they know everything and I know nothing. Listen to them. You know, I'm not such a hot shot. Listen to them and learn, which I did.
Well, and you have paid it back so handily because your blog and your podcast are just packed full of information. If you're just into television for fun or if you want to be a writer. And so you've really paid it forward. So I'm sure a lot of people are very grateful for that, including me. Have you noticed, like, over the years that you've been creating that kind of content, that the questions that people ask you have changed? Or is it still the same type of inquiries?
No, it's still the same type of inquiries. How do I break in? What are they looking for? That type of thing. You know, and I always say, you need to just keep writing.
Yeah.
That if you write three scripts, your fourth script is going to be better and your fifth script is going to be better than that. A lot of times writers will make the mistake of writing one script and that's it. It's like, okay, this is my script. So, you know, roll up the Brinks truck. Here I am.
I imagine, though, the people, because so much has changed in the business since, you know, the sort of sitcom heyday, that I just thought maybe people are just constantly talking about, I don't know, binge watching or reboots and things like that, which are relatively new concepts, I suppose.
Yeah, it's interesting because when we wrote these shows, first of all, like, say, MASH. Okay, when we were writing MASH, We had no idea that 40 years later, it would be on the Hallmark Channel 15 yeah. times a day.
Yeah.
You know, we were just trying to write the best jokes and do the best show for the Tuesday night airing. And so they were written to be seen once a week. You know, we yeah. never thought in terms of people watching 7 episodes in a row. God, I wish we had that when we were doing our Mary Tyler Moore show. It wouldn't have taken 8 weeks. We could just sit there for a weekend and just watch an entire season and figure it out. But yeah, it's very different. And so like MASH, because MASH was so packed with lines and quick jokes and 3 stories going on and a lot of movement that we thought, well, a half an hour is like just the right amount of time that somebody would want to watch this. And yet there are people that say, oh, I'll watch 6-7 episodes a night.
Yeah,
so
man.
Like, great. Yeah, great.
Well, what's amazing, you know? Though, is given that you were writing it, thinking of it as this episodic weekly thing, and now it's changed in terms of how people consume it, but the jokes still hold up. The work still holds up. I think that that is such a gift that you have, that you're funny forever. Your jokes aren't expired.
Well, the great thing about MASH is that it was already a period piece.
Mm-hmm.
It was already set in the 50s when the show was done in the 70s.
Right.
And because it's the Army, they're all wearing Army uniforms. So you're not going, oh my God, look at that tie.
Right. That's such a good point. Because that is, you know, something that dates a lot of shows. Even if they're still funny, it's obvious that it's not modern.
Right.
Wow.
And then you have shows like Murphy Brown that really signed a Faustian contract in that they had to be really topical.
Stylish. Yeah. Oh, right.
Which is great for its first airing, but now when they're doing Dan Quayle jokes and jokes about Westmoreland and John Dean and Watergate people, like, you know, 80% of the audience has no idea what they're talking about.
Why do you think that reboot didn't have as much success as others?
It just felt old and musty. And I think they made a tactical mistake by really going after the politics instead of the character development.
Yeah.
So I guess they figured, well, there's enough people that hate Trump that would tune in every week to watch us Trump bash. And it was just, you know, they're going after easy targets. And there wasn't any real character development. And to me, the best shows are the ones when you're invested in the characters. And if your lead character has a problem, do you care?
Yes.
You know, more than do you laugh, do you care?
Oh, my God. Right. That is so true. I was listening to your interview with Jim Burrows, which everyone should listen to on Hollywood and Levine podcast, because it's a two-parter and Jim is a legend. And it was just, he never does interviews as far as I know. And that was a real get for you, I'm sure. But
oh, yeah. And he was terrific.
Yeah. And I felt like it was so insightful the way you guys were talking about on Cheers, how Sam acted, his eyes were the eyes of the viewer. So what he saw, then you would adopt. So if he loved Norm and Cliff, then the audience loves them. And so it creates that sense of what you just described of caring. You start to care about the people and what happens to them. I really found
exactly.
that interesting.
Yeah, the fact that Sam really loved all of those people. And if you loved Sam, then you too would love all of those people. And some of them on the surface were not necessarily that lovable. When you look at Carla, you know, I mean, Carla was just a sniper taking shots at people But you understood that she was a single mother of five kids, and she had to work her ass off just to put food on the table. So you kind of understood where that anger was coming from. But still, she wasn't what you would call a lovable, cuddly character.
Right, right, on the surface. But yet we still loved her. That was genius, right, what you guys created. I just read the Cheers, a Cultural History that you were interviewed for with the Darosky siblings that wrote that book. Did you read it yet?
No, I have not read that yet.
I harassed them into sending me an advanced copy because, you know, I'm ravenous for Cheers content. And uh-huh. I was so grateful that you participated in that because I think it added so much depth to the critical analysis of the show. And one thing that stuck out was how, you know, the way that Cheers began, it wasn't a hit. And then it was allowed to grow and build. And it makes me sad that that's no longer really an option. Does that make you sad, or do you think that's better in general?
Well, it was lucky for us that at the time we were at NBC, two things worked in our favor. Number one, Grant Tinker was running the network, and Grant Tinker really understood the value of quality. His feeling was always, if something is really good, people will find it.
Yeah.
And the second thing is that they had nothing behind us that was any better. You know, if they had something great, then that would have been it. But they stuck with us, and it was very frustrating because I think that the first year of Cheers is the best year of the series.
Mm.
And most of the time, that's not the case. Most of the time, shows sort of find a groove year two and yeah. three and that sort of thing. But that first year when Sam and Diane were kind of playing cat and mouse with each other,
yeah.
That was really, really special. And we'd look at the ratings and we'd shake our heads and go, you know, if we sat up and worked an extra half hour at night, it's mm-hmm. not going to make the ratings go any higher. This is our best stuff. This right. is the best we can do. And we were very fortunate that we won the Emmy that year for the best new comedy. And back in those days, before you had 1,000 channel universe, back in those days, you still just had, there were just three networks back then. And there would be summer reruns.
Yeah.
And when we won the Emmy, a lot of people started watching the show that summer who hadn't seen the original run, and it kind of picked up from there. And then the second year, we did better. Not great, but we did better. And then the third year, Cosby premiered.
Oh.
And Cosby was getting like 49 shares, and a high tide raises all boats. All of a sudden, we were like a top five show, and that was it. We were off to the races.
I'm so thankful that you guys were allowed that opportunity to grow and hit your stride, or at least find your audience. I mean, you hit your stride in the pilot, as far as I'm concerned, but the audience had to find you. I'm so glad you got the chance, because now
the interesting thing too is that we got a 19 share. Now, a 19 share is probably 22 million people.
Wow.
Okay? Today, if a show got 19
right.
shares, you know, Big Bang Theory
yeah.
on for like 11 years, whatever, had its season finale, its series finale, and got 18 million people.
Wow.
And we were like a low-rated show with only 22 million people. 84 million people watched our series finale.
It kind of bumps me out that collective viewing is just not going to happen anymore. Does it bother you, or are you just adjusting?
Oh, it bothers me terribly.
Yeah.
Because there are no more shared events.
Yes.
Yes, everybody can watch their shows on their time and their schedule, but there was something very cool about it being a shared event and everybody watching at the same time and talking about it the next day and anticipating it and that sort of thing. You rarely see that. For a while, when American Idol was a thing back in the 2000s. There was that feeling where you had to, like, watch the show that night to see what was going to happen. And now, other than sporting events, you really have no real reason to watch shows. And I don't know about you, but my viewing habits now, because there's so many shows on so many platforms, is I'll just wait until enough people tell me, oh, you got to see this show. This show is great. You have to see Killing Eve. You have to see Killing Eve. Mm-hmm. So then I start watching Killing Eve, and it's like, yeah, this is a great show.
Right, because otherwise you could get invested and the show will disappear anyway, too.
Right.
Well,
exactly.
Yeah.
That happens often.
Right. It bums me out. And, like, I was even thinking about how a lot of – I prefer sitcoms from the 80s and 90s, and a lot of the plots would no longer hold up because of the existence of phones. And I'm wondering if you would – think that it would be it's more difficult to write for sitcoms now because a lot of those plot devices just don't exist anymore in terms of misunderstandings, etc.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's also much harder to write murder mysteries or plays because, you know, you're right. It's not like somebody is stranded in Harlem. How does he get out of it?
Right.
Well, he picks up his phone and he just calls his buddy.
Calls Uber, yeah.
Yeah, he calls Uber, exactly.
Yeah, that doesn't leave a lot for plot, does it?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
That bumps
You know, we
me
had
out.
A thing on Cheers, and it always drove me crazy that people would come from, like, different locations, and they were going to meet Sam, or they wanted to meet Frasier. This happened a lot of times, okay? So they would come from the airport and go to Cheers.
Right.
And they'd come in with their luggage, and they would go, is Frasier here? And sometimes Frasier was, and the scene continued. But I thought to myself, who does that? Right? Like, wouldn't the guy check into a hotel first? He's just going to go to a bar. He's going to send the taxi away. And is Frasier here? Nope. He left about a half hour ago. Okay.
Right. Take
and
your
then
luggage.
He has to pick up his luggage and go up the stairs and get another cab. And, like, this was always insane to me. But my protests fell on deaf ears.
They didn't care. I support it. I support anyone that goes to a bar directly from the airport or anywhere else. You know, one thing, because I'm a big fan of Wings as well, but that show never really got the same sort of respect. I don't know if that's the right word. As
yeah, it never
shows.
Did. And it was really funny. I worked on Wings for, God, like 5 or 6 years. And it was always very funny, but it was always in the shadow of Cheers. And it did okay rating-wise.
Yeah.
But then when the USA Network started and they had no programming, they played Wings episodes like 8 times a day.
Yes.
And we were still making first-run episodes.
Mm.
And we thought, well, this is really going to kill the show, because now no one is going to want to watch another episode of Wings after watching 8 episodes every day.
Yeah.
But it turned out to be the opposite. It turned out to be that it introduced Wings to a lot more people, and then they started watching the first runs, and our ratings actually went way up. But you look at those shows, and I'm very proud of them, and they're very well plotted, and they're very funny. They're a lot funnier than most shows today, and we never got any kind of Emmy love. The only Emmy nomination that Wings got, and it happened to be an episode that my partner David Isaacs and I wrote, was the one where Kelsey and Bebe, where Frasier and Lilith go to Wings.
For the conference,
and we did that crossover episode, and Kelsey got nominated for an Emmy.
I mean,
okay, none of the Wings cast ever got nominated for an Emmy.
And I just don't get it, because I love those characters. And I like that they're in the same way that Cheers is real people of all sizes and shapes It's like that with the Wings cast, too. It's just a bunch of misfit toys. I love that.
Yeah, and some really good actors. Thomas Hayden Church,
yes.
Who went on and did get an Oscar nomination for Sideways.
Yeah.
And Tony Shalhoub.
Yeah.
I mean, Tony Shalhoub is just so great. David Schramm.
He went to Juilliard.
Roy. David Schramm, like, disappeared. He gave up acting. He moved to New York. And I really don't know what he's doing now, but this is like 10 years ago now. I had a play reading in New York, and there was a part that I thought he would be great for, and he was living in upstate New York. So I asked around for his email, and he doesn't have email.
Shut up.
He doesn't have email. So I was able to get his phone number, and I called him, and I said, I can't email you the script. I'm going to have to send it to you.
Oh, my God, you mailed it?
Yeah, and I mailed it, and he called up and said, yeah, this is fun. I'll come in for a night and do this. And he was just wonderful, and I thought to myself, you should be on the stage. You should be in the screen. Very, very funny.
Do you think he just burnt out or what?
I don't know. He apparently is very happy. He's living somewhere in upstate New York. I'm not sure exactly what he's doing. He doesn't really miss it.
Oh, well, he was phenomenal, and I couldn't believe when I looked him up and it said he went to Juilliard, and I thought, now that's a good actor, because he became Roy Biggins in my
head.
That's how good he is.
And he's so unlike that guy.
right, thank God.
He is so unlike that guy. Yeah.
Well, I am dying to know one last thing, which is, what is your deal with Natalie Wood, Ken? Let's hear it.
Okay, well, for people who don't know, in my blog, I try to post a picture every day that's apropos of whatever the post is.
Yeah.
And if I can't think of an appropriate one, I just post a picture of Natalie Wood. When I was a young teenager, my dad took me to the Pantages Theater in Hollywood to see a movie called The Great Race, which was a silly comedy.
Okay.
But it starred Natalie Wood. And when I saw Natalie Wood, I was
changed.
Like that wolf in the Warner Brothers cartoons where his like eyes pop out on springs,
right.
That type of thing.
Oh, okay.
My hormones just exploded, and I had a huge crush on Natalie Wood. Always a huge Natalie Wood fan. The only time I ever saw her in person, ironically, was just a couple of months before her death, because we were working at MGM, and she was doing Brainstorm there, and came into the commissary one day. But I've always loved her work. And I just think the circumstances of her death are really suspicious.
I'll say.
And I think there's more to that story. And
yes.
So I'm forever looking for somebody to shed some light on it.
Oh, my gosh. You're still her advocate.
Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful. When you saw her in real life, did you go weak in the knee?
Kind of.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God.
Right.
Oh my God.
Your dream woman was in person, in the flesh.
You know, a fun story about Natalie Wood and the sense of eroticism that we have,
yes.
Where things that we can't see become very erotic.
Yes.
Well, Natalie Wood, when she was a child actress, there was some movie and she was like in a river and she hurt her hand and they reset the wrist and a wrist bone was protruding a little bit.
Mm.
And she always was very sensitive about that and always wore a bracelet. Always wore a bracelet. If you look on any Natalie Wood movie or any picture of Natalie Wood, you will see that she is wearing a bracelet. Well, she did the movie Splendor in the Grass, and Elia Kazan was the director. And there's a scene where she's in a bathtub and her mother comes in and there is an angry exchange between them and that sort of thing. And at some point, she gets up. And of course, this was like in the 50s or early 60s. And so you never saw anything.
Yes.
But Kazan said to her, you can't wear the bracelet. You're in a bathtub. It's going to look ridiculous.
Right.
And you can't wear the bracelet. So she reluctantly took it off. And there's like a couple of shots where you see it. And I'm going, oh, man.
Come on.
Oh, my God. I'm seeing Natalie Wood's wrist.
Forbidden fruit.
Yeah. Oh, forbidden fruit. I'm seeing her wrist.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
And
yeah, the value of eroticism.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm really glad I got to the bottom of that mystery because I was like, what is this guy's deal with this woman? But now I know.
Yeah. And my wife gets it. She's like, okay, good
She's
luck.
Supportive.
She, you know, it's like, well, you know,
yes.
I'm not going to leave my wife for her.
That's
so.
Right. It's allowed.
Yeah. Right. It's kind of a fun thing to do.
Well, I'm just forever thankful for your talent because you have touched my life. I've told you so many times because you're magical. And I'm just glad that people like you exist and help make the rest of our lives bearable. And
well, thank
we love
you.
You.
And, you know, I have a podcast because of you.
Right.
Because you went to lunch with me one day and said, you should start a podcast. And you and your husband, Adam, have been so supportive and so great. And I'm in my third year doing it. I think I'm on episode 140. And
wow.
I love doing it and never would have started without you guys.
Yay.
So a big thanks to you.
Well, I'm honored. And I hope that tons of people keep listening and reading your blog because you have so many great stories to tell. We only scratched the surface. So thank you, Ken. You're off the hook.
Well, I'm happy to be on again.
Yay. You're
Yay,
my first third timer
in a year.
Thank you so much. I know that you have to go. Also, I want to harass you into going to lunch or dinner sometime. So we'll have to,
love to do it.
Sort it out.
Love to do it.
Thanks, Ken. Have
great.
A great
Thanks,
day.
Thanks, Susie.
Talk soon.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
This podcast is brought to you by Wave Podcast Network. Check out all of our shows, including the Brain Candy Podcast, I Don't Get It, Coffee Convos, and Let's Talk About It.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.